Liveline on RTE Radio 1 with a Kia EV6, the fully electric EV6 with a range of up to 528 kilometres. For more, visit kia.com.
1850 715 815.
Good afternoon, I'm Damien O'Reilly and this is Liveline. I'm here for Joe for the next few days. 51551 is our text. Jessica Freed is first on the line. Jessica, good afternoon to you.
Hello, Damien.
How does couch surfing and not having a place to call home affect your self-esteem, Jessica?
Well, you know what, Damien? There's really nothing wrong with my self-esteem. There's something so wrong with the system. It just makes me furious that myself or anyone has to be in this situation. I think the reason I'm here, and to be perfectly honest, my idea of nothing at all was really to come on the radio talking about my personal business. But I felt compelled to do it. I have so many colleagues. I'm a freelance actor. I have so many colleagues in the business and out of it who are in this situation. And they exactly, kind of touching on what you said, they're shamed by it. They can't speak about it. They're traumatized. It's affected their self-esteem. They're afraid of the repercussions. And somebody just has to actually talk about this.
So what is your situation, Jessica?
Well, I've been renting since the late 80s. I've been a freelance actor since the 80s. I was in my last place for 15 years. 10 of those years, I was a carer for my mother, who was blind. She died 3 years ago. A year later, I got a notice to quit. Trouble-free tenancy. Got on well with the landlord. He wanted to refurbish. Mm. So that was it. And COVID intervened. And obviously, it was, you know, there was a long lead-in before I had to leave. I finally had to leave last September. I've been couch surfing ever since. There's nowhere to go. And I mean there's nowhere to go. I have an excellent reference from the landlord. Haven't had an opportunity to show it to anybody in 2 years because there's just simply nowhere to rent. Compounded probably by the fact that I'm a freelance artist and single, I have no children. I've been on the housing list for 10 years, nowhere near the top of it. So I have been left couch surfing for a year, basically, only for the fact that I have friends, I'd be in homeless accommodation. And like most people might, I'm in my 50s now, like most people my age, you know, there's no family home, my parents are gone. There's just nowhere to go. There's nowhere to go to kind of say, okay, well, I'm not really homeless. I can go back to home when something's really bad. And I'm kind of, I really want to challenge. And I realize I realize that this is my life. If I found a place to rent tomorrow, like anybody else, it's not the end of it. I'm only in my 50s now. I'm heading into old age with this. And so is everybody who, this is the rental market. Even people listening now, they're in their 20s and 30s, say, this has nothing to do with me. This is heading down the track for you too, unless something changes. This is happening to people in their 60s and 70s. I might find a place to rent a year, 5 years, 10 years. I'm going to be back where I was.
And you say you can't find any... excuse me, Jessica, a frog on my show. You say that you can't find anywhere. Are places not available? Are there no one bed sits? Is it because of, as you said, the fact that you're single, you only have one income, and the fact that you're a freelancer, which means it's not a reliable income in the eyes maybe of the landlords?
Yeah, it's kind of a combination of all of that. You rarely get to see a place. You rarely get an answer to an ad. If you answer an ad, you won't get a reply. They don't need to reply to you. There's hundreds of people chasing a single property, which might be of the worst possible quality and a huge amount of money. That's what I mean. You don't even have a chance to show anybody that your references, because they don't. I've rarely even been able to see places, even been able to view places. And of course, like I think you had somebody on last week who's a musician, faced the same thing, which basically, we can't rent to you, you're a musician. You know, when you even get that far, you don't, you know, at the fact that I've paid rent religiously for 30 years and could have owned a property by now if I'd been able to access a mortgage, it counts for nothing in this country. Freelancers are actually some of the most reliable people you can rent to because we have no margin for error. We have to manage our money. We have to pay our bills, you know, but it's not seen like that. And none of it matters. And like you say, there are very few one bedrooms. They don't build. That's why you don't move very much on the housing list. And I mean, part of the narrative around the housing and homelessness is that people have the stereotypes of that people have of the people in the situation are just, I mean, just some of them, you know, feckless, lazy, didn't make the right choices, all want something for nothing. This is the most popular, okay? And this just maintains the status quo. And people are clinging to the concept of property as wealth creation instead of a home.
But a home
is everything.
But Jessica, did you have a plan going back over the years to, you know, rent initially, save money, buy your own home? Or were you happy renting up until recent times?
I was happy enough renting in my 20s. I was in a bedsit. I was, because you could rent then. I didn't have anything. None of us had anything. But you could live debt free because your rent was in relation to what you had, even if you were on social welfare on and off, or you had a small amount of money. So I was happy enough in my 20s and early 30s. From then, I would have preferred to own a home. I was never able to access a mortgage. The only time I was even offered the possibility of it by my bank was during the boom. When they were throwing money at people, you know, and I was asked to come in by my bank. Do you want a mortgage? I said, yes, please. I would love a mortgage, but I'm an actor. I was always turned down. Oh, that's all gone, says he. So he came, I went into him. He looked at my income. He said, yes, we can lend you €127,000. We're willing to lend you this amount. I said, yes, but what can I buy for that? Houses are 400,000. Oh, right. Yeah, I said, so that kind of no use to me. You could have given this to me 5 years ago. But, oh, right, you know, there's no joined up thinking. And so that was the end. That was the only time. You know, had I been able to access a mortgage, I'd pay a mortgage now. And since actors don't retire, I could pay for it for the next 20 years.
Yeah.
But I cannot access it. And so many people are in this situation.
It seems like that. And people have, over the years, have not been able to save a deposit because they're pumping so much money into
rent. Oh, nowadays, yeah. Forget it.
Ivana Bacic was on Morning Ireland this morning. She said that she knew of somebody who had spent over €300,000 in rent over the last number of years.
Yep.
That would buy you a nice house.
Yeah, that's me. Yeah. housing, if people have to get to grips with this, housing is a human right, okay? Mm-hmm. And the right, another thing I want to knock on the head, because there's a very disingenuous thing doing the rounds here, the right to housing, when people talk about putting the right to housing in the Constitution, that doesn't mean free housing. And nobody thinks it does. A lot of people say, oh, free housing. Yeah, everybody wants a free house, right to housing. It's right to access. Access is everything. I mean, we have access to food. Food isn't free. But you don't, but there's not a few people controlling the supply chain. Even a poor person can buy a bag of potatoes, you know? Yeah. It's not the same. And housing is the same thing. It's access. I mean, where would any of us be? Where would our parents and grandparents have been if they couldn't access housing?
Yeah.
It doesn't matter whether it was a mortgage in Fox Rock or a corporation house in Finglas. You could access housing. And that was on one salary, usually the man's. Mothers were at home. There's about a million children. But they could live.
But this
is what people are forgetting that,
yeah,
you know?
But just take me back to this idea of having to as it's called, couch surf and approaching your friends and approaching friends of yours to ask them. What
awful.
Does that feel like?
It feels awful. And it's not, I mean, it's, I won't say it's humiliating, but that's only because I have such good friends who when they offer me a couch to sleep on, do that with the utmost sincerity. But it is just, it's soul destroying. I say myself, esteem is pretty robust, but it's soul destroying. You feel the despair of it. And this is not an adventure in your 50s. It's an adventure in your 20s, you know, sharing with people. You're moving in with people that have families. They have children. They have a life. No matter how fond they are of you, it's an imposition. And you're there going, I'm at the age I am. I work hard. I'm a responsible person. I don't want anything from anybody. I don't expect to be handed anything. And I'm here like a beggar. Mm-hmm. You know, I'm literally like, What is this? How did I end up here? This is not my fault, you know. And there's no reason for it. And we get the privilege of being looked down on, as if we didn't have particularly artist is if we didn't do a proper job, we didn't really have a job, and if, you know, it was almost like it's a lifestyle choice instead of a profession. And really, if we had a, you know, if we made different choices, we wouldn't have a problem. And it's just, it's, it doesn't, there's no joined up thinking, there's no logic to it. And yeah, you just can't, if the pandemic has taught us nothing else, it's that you can't function without a home. A home is everything. I sat in that house, just about to have to leave the house that I was in. But the last few months during the pandemic is awful anyway. It's frightening. And I'm sitting there and I'm listening to people go on about their homes and their banana bread and their gardening and their doing and how it made them feel safe. And I thought, this is it. It's safety. It's the most fundamental human need. No matter what awful thing is going on, okay, there's a worldwide pandemic, but at least you have your home. Yeah. That you're safe in.
Now,
and we don't have that.
Yeah, and you use the word we there quite a lot, and you did refer to earlier on colleagues, other actors.
Are there,
like, without naming names, obviously, are there people that we would know, maybe in the public eye, that are
absolutely
struggling like you?
A couple, yeah. And I certainly would never name names, you know, and they were like, can't deal with it. There's too much going on, or I have this, or I have that. Some people are just clinging on to their rented properties by their fingernails, and they don't want to alienate the landlord, so they don't want it talked about. But the idea that you'd have lived your life and you'd have contributed to your society and you pay your taxes and you're facing this, and at the same time you're saying and you're allowing people are playing people off against each other, and people are treating what I find equally offensive is being. And people mean well by this, but it's like, how can you be homeless? What do you mean by that? Well, I mean you're hardworking and you're sober and you're this and you're articulate and you're educated. I said, do you realize what you're saying? That's like saying some people deserve it and some people don't. Everybody needs a roof over their head. They need support. And if people have problems, they need support. They don't need to be judged. They don't need to be looked down on. This isn't, homes are not optional. Food is not optional. You know, this is the very essence of people's existence. You die without it. You just die without it. And it's the one bedroom, I mean, as far as they just show you how much property is commodified, you talk about lack of one bedroom properties. You hear developers or the government, who's kind of the mouthpiece for developers, talking about one bedroom units. It's not economically viable. And you're kind of listening to this and you're kind of laughing, going, hello, half the people on the housing list are single one reason or another.
Yeah.
It's like you don't matter. It's like, you know, listen, if we just had the good taste to crawl away into a hole and just die and remove our meaningless existence from society, you know, we'd all be better off. Because, you know, Damien, we're all just living out of spite. Do you know what I mean? At the point, you just have to laugh. You just go, this is crackers.
But
Where are we supposed to go?
Yeah, and I just wonder, like in your own mind, you're obviously thinking about now what's going to happen next February when, you know, you have to move out of your friend's house and you're looking for a solution. I wonder, are there many people listening to us now that maybe are a little older, their family have left the house and they're living in big houses, 3-4 bedrooms or whatever like that, that would be happy enough to rent out a room? Or is that allowed now? Or I'm not sure, wasn't there something about that?
I think it's allowed, all right. I mean, obviously, you know, it's...
Well, I'm just wondering, are there people, you know, is there a way of matching people up?
Sure. Oh, absolutely. I think actually that's a really good solution for students, to be honest, because students are in crisis. They're deferring their places in college because they can't find a place to live. We're going back to the thing of this being at a stage in your life where you're expected. I mean, think about it yourself. You reach middle age. You have a certain life. You have possessions. You have things. And then you're being told to go live in somebody's room. You know what I mean? It's just... Everybody, we need a home. You need a home. I don't need much. Yeah. I don't. You know, you can convert a space over a shop. Give me a big old room in a Georgian, a Georgian building. I'll make a home out of it.
Would you move down the country where it's a lot cheaper and there are probably lots of houses that would be affordable for you?
Okay. Well, the short answer to that is no, because my work is here. Most of my work is here, and prices are going up everywhere. And if I move, they're not a lot cheaper. Well, unless you move to some really rural part. I have no car, don't drive. And what would I be doing down there except being on the dole because my main work is here.
Sure,
so
sure.
What good is that?
Yeah,
sitting in the middle of nowhere.
Yeah,
you know?
it's a fair question that people often put to in the context of the housing crisis. Well, you know, could you live somewhere else where it's cheaper? And you've made the point there. It's impossible for you to do it. You just couldn't
do it.
Exactly.
I mean, there was probably just as well. I don't remember his name because somebody that was in the housing. Something to do with housing. He's retired now.
Right.
He likes stirring people up. He was on, I think, prime time, smirkingly saying that people could go on. Yeah, we people can live down the country. People can do.
Sure.
People can make. And I think the person, whoever was interviewing him, said, "Well, hang on a second. They choose to live in Dublin. Yeah, but their home is in Dublin. Their work is in Dublin. Well, you know, people can make choices. People can change their jobs.
There's no one size fits all for everybody. Everybody has different reasons. Exactly.
Why should you have to? I mean, the point is, why would you even have to live? I mean, obviously, you have to be flexible. You can't be rigid about it. But I mean, why would you have to leave your home? What would happen? Forget about even me or actors or anything else. Just even think about the people that pour your coffee and then work in your gym and sweep the streets and all the people in Dublin that do all these little jobs that you couldn't get on without. Where are they supposed to live? Are they supposed to all move down the country if they can't afford to live in Dublin? It doesn't make, there's no logic to it.
Okay,
take the emotion out of it. There's no logic to it.
All right, 51551 is our text. Trish Duff is on the line. Hello, Trish. You're listening there to Jessica.
Damien, how are you doing? Hi, Jessica.
Hi, Trish.
Damien, I sent in a text there because I feel very sorry for Jessica and lots of people like Jessica around the country. And I wanted to just raise the question about what happened to the Kent Council shared ownership loans. I felt very lucky. I was 23. I was a single parent. And there was no way that I could have gotten the housing ladder without the £1,000 that I borrowed from my parents and my family. To be able to get on the housing ladder back then, and that was probably in the early 1990s. I know a lot of people got on the housing ladder with them. There wasn't the stories that we hear now about homelessness and about people like Jessica who don't just want to be able to put their key in their own front door and call that their safe place. So I think it's a good question to raise, you know.
Yeah, so what happened? What happened to the local authority shared ownership loans?
Yeah, that kind of went by the board, I think.
Right.
It got too much. Once house prices, once it was like monopoly money, they just kind of stopped doing it.
Yeah. Stay there, Trish and Jessica. Nuala Kelly's on the line. Good afternoon, Nuala. You're listening to Jessica.
Hello, everybody. I'm on the bus at the moment, so maybe the sound isn't going to be so good.
No, you're fine. Go ahead. You're on the bus. Where are you going to?
I'm going from Mullingar to Dublin because I now live in Mullingar because I could not afford anywhere to rent in Dublin. And I mean anywhere. I was at one stage just living in a hotel. That was the only place that I could find somewhere to live. I went over to England for a little while to save my sister. She moved to America and I came back to Ireland then because this is where I work, obviously. But I couldn't find anywhere. And then I was looking up on the internet and I saw this place in Mullingar and I went to hell with it. I can live down there. There's a bus every hour. You know, it's expensive to travel up and down, but at least I've got a roof over my head that I can afford to rent.
Mm.
But I could find nothing in Dublin. I do not know one solitary single person in the whole of Mullingar. So during the whole lockdown, I had nowhere to talk to. I couldn't go out for a walk with anybody. I was so isolated. Honestly, it drove me mad. I couldn't even go to America to visit my family because, you know, of the travel ban, we couldn't go over. So it really played a huge effect on my mental health. The fact that even when, you know, when the things loosened up a bit and you could meet with somebody outside for a coffee or something, I had nobody to talk to because everybody that I know is in Dublin because that's where I work and that's where I socialise. That's where I'm heading to now tonight to go out to meet a friend.
And do you feel that, does age come into it at all, Nuala?
Oh, listen, I'm in my 60s now and I also have, you know, a bit of a disability. Which means that, you know, getting on and off country buses is difficult. But it does. Nobody wants, you know, when I was looking for somewhere to live, I was ringing up all these, you know, house shares. And, you know, I'd go around and people would be really nice. And then they'd say, oh, no, we got somebody else. Because nobody wants an L1 living in their house because they think, oh, gee, we're going to have her for the rest of their life. These are all young people, you know, starting out in their careers that managed to get an apartment or get a house, and obviously they have to rent out rooms to make their mortgage, you know, unless they have a partner. And they don't want another one living in the house with them.
And
you know,
you,
that's the truth of it.
Like, your situation sounds very similar to the situation that Jessica finds herself in. I mean, are you alone? Are you single
yes,
as well?
Yes, I am alone. Yeah. And that's another thing, because very often people in their late, you know, in their later years, people don't really want a single person because they think you have a backstory. They think that there's going to, I mean, at the moment, this is the truth, I live in an apartment building and there's two people living in the apartment building around my age, maybe about 6-7 years younger. And both of them, there's a lot of trouble because their ex-partners turn up at all hours of the day and night. One is a woman and one is a man. Mm. And they've ex-partners coming around. I've had to call guards twice on them. Now, one of them has just moved out, basically just been thrown out. But there's alcohol, there's all those problems. And when people see that you're in your 60s, it doesn't matter how nice you are at the interview, they go, I don't want, you know, her family and her son or anybody turning up. And
yeah,
and
so you're just, saying, you know, when you appear at the door in your 50s and 60s, immediately people are stereotyping you as having you're on your own. There must be a reason for that. How have you settled into Mullingar? I mean, Jessica says that it would be impossible for her to move down the country because all of her work is in Dublin and she doesn't drive. How have you managed?
I'm the same, but it's very, very stressful. If I have to get, I'm like Jessica, I work freelance. And if I get a job, and there's no shortage of work, I'm getting work, I'm able to pay my bills. But if I have to get a job, and I don't drive, unfortunately, but if I have a job and I have to start, say, at 7:30 in the morning, there's a bus leaves Mullingar at 6 o'clock. If that bus is delayed in any way, if there's a hold up in traffic, my stress levels are up to 90. Because if I, you know, start turning up late for work as a freelancer, people say, oh, look, we can get somebody else because she's always late. You know, I've never been late, maybe 3 or 4 minutes. I usually make it on time. But it really affects my stress. You know, oh my God, am I going to make it? And 6 o'clock is the earliest bus I can get. And I usually, if I have to start work at 2:30, I'll get the 11 o'clock bus so that I'm off and then I'm hanging around Dublin for an hour or two while I'm waiting, because I'm just have to be on time. And I don't, like Jessica, have a family home anymore. Both my parents are deceased and most of my family live. My brother lives in Canada, my sister lives in the States. And so I don't have family. I have cousins and that in Dublin, but, you know, I'm not going to go around saying to them, no, give me somewhere to live, because it's humiliating. They all have owned their own houses. I obviously am the total, you know, feckless one in the family that didn't have an amazing career. And that would be because I have a neurodivergent disorder. I'm profoundly dyslexic. So there's a lot of work I can't do. But what I do work at, I'm reasonably successful and I'm earning my own living, and I just cannot find anywhere to live. And I also, many years ago, tried to go on the housing list, and I was told, quite frankly, by the guy, oh no, you're not going to get anywhere, we can't even put you on the list because you've no children, you know, so we're not going to put you on. Now, I've been told since then that they can't do that, but to be honest with you, I just can't face going up trying to get on a housing list in my 60s.
And like, are you lonely then?
No, I'm not a lonely person. I'm not lonely. When I live on my own, I'm fine. I'm, you know, quite happy to read a book and watch the TV or whatever. But I just always want, at the end of the, you know, at whatever time I decide, you know what, I need to go out and meet some people, then I want to be able to go out and do it. Now I have to take a nearly 2-hour bus journey to do that, you know, to go up to Dublin to meet some friends.
Yeah.
Because I just don't know. I have no family connection with Mullingar whatsoever. It's a lovely town. People are absolutely lovely. People say hello to you in the streets. People are really friendly. I have a nice landlord. You know, if I needed anything, he would look after me. But during the lockdown, I was so unbelievably isolated. It was like shocked me at times. I remember thinking, if I died, you know, they wouldn't find my body for 3 weeks or whatever, you know, because I know nobody that's going to call to my house or that I can meet over, you know, for a coffee sitting on the wall in the park or anything. I just know nobody.
Okay, stay there, Nuala. Listen, I'll let you go, Nuala, because you're on the bus there. And thanks for your call and safe travelling up to Dublin. And I appreciate you giving us a call. Paul is on the line. Good afternoon, Paula. You're listening to Jessica.
I'm listening to Jessica, and I just want to briefly call in because I cannot stay on the phone. I have a meeting to go to, but I wanted to say thank you to Jessica for raising the issue, for naming her name and for raising the issue. I am actually sick and tired of listening to a conversation about housing almost my whole life. And all of this conversation revolves around young people. And it assumes that first-time buyers are in their 20s. And what Jessica has done is that she has pointed out that there's a whole generation of people who have been absolutely failed by a completely failed, broken system. And she has nothing to be ashamed of. None of us who haven't been able to afford to get a mortgage, none of us have anything to be ashamed of. Mm. The people who should be ashamed are the people who make a living keeping a broken system on the road. They are bankers. They are politicians. Many of those politicians are themselves landlords. So yeah. We have a system which is crazy because the conflicting interests keep the system broken on behalf of the people who actually need the houses. And what we actually need here is a movement. We need to stop being silent, and we need to speak out, and we need to name the problem.
But,
and I thank Jessica for what she has done.
But
thank you for that.
Just on that, like we do, landlords play an important role in the whole system as well, as you know. We need landlords. We need places to rent. So it's renting suits some people.
Renting doesn't suit anybody since 1984 or 1994.
Renting is a
temporary option. We live in a society that doesn't provide housing. This isn't Germany.
Yep.
So what we need to do is to stop mixing the argument, Damien. Mm. What you've just done there is confuse the news. The issue: we're not living in a place where renting can suit people for the long term. We live in a society where the only asset people have at the end of their lives is their home.
Yeah.
That's the kind of country we live in. So we have to actually design a system for our country.
Yes.
You agree with that, Jessica?
Absolutely. And thank you for saying it. I really appreciate what you're saying. Because that's it. That's the crux of it. This is an accidental. A lot of people are accidental landlords. These people were encouraged to go out, buy properties, buy to lets. There's your pension, without thinking about the people that have to live in the system. This isn't like Germany. It isn't like countries where it's set up to rent for the long term. So you can't say it suits people.
But I just wonder, since
1984.
Yeah, no, I just wonder, listening to various discussions and indeed callers into Joe last week on this very issue, isn't that part of the problem actually now, coincidentally, that so many so-called accidental landlords are selling up, which is actually creating this problem that you find yourself in?
Stop there.
Okay, Pauly, No, I'm just putting the question out. That argument is made.
Well, forget about that. Let's stop looking after the landlords. We need to start looking after the citizens. This is not a market. You're speaking the language of the market there, and you're basically saying that the providers in that market,
is
the landlords...
Damien.
This is the question that you have to answer. You, Damien. Would you like to have been living in rented accommodation for 25 years?
Absolutely not.
Now, stop right there. Everybody who's part of the system, the people who provide the money, the people in the councils, the people who make the policies, the politicians, everybody needs to sit and in silence ask themselves that question. Would I be prepared to live in rented accommodation for a quarter of a century? Would that feel like a good model of life?
And if
the answer to that is no, then we need to stop talking about the participants in the system and talk about the system itself.
No, but I'm just wondering, I'm just putting the question to you, Paula, that this, when this discussion comes up on the radio and people say that there's a shortage now, okay, and maybe it's a separate argument, there is a shortage, obviously, of accommodation, and the people now finding themselves homeless in the last number of years, what is it, 8,000-10,000 people, many of those were people who were forced to leave their accommodation they're in because the landlords were selling up and getting out of it.
Please, go ahead, Jessica.
Damien, I know you're just repeating what people are saying. This is a scare tactic. This is what people do. If the landlord or the landlords will sell up, if they don't get what they need, they're going to sell up. There's going to be a shortage. You know what? At this stage, Let there be a shortage. Let us all go out and in the Phoenix Park and set up tents, all 10,000 of us, and sit there until the proper policies are put into place. It's no point in having a rented accommodation when it's not suitable. When it's not suitable for people, yes, I can see landlords having to sell, the odd landlord having to sell up because they can no longer afford or whatever their problem is. I don't care what it is. It's just to scare people with that, as if, oh my God, if you don't give them what they want, this is what they're going to do. Let them. Let yes. people see what this means. You know
what we need to do, what we need to do is to reveal the system itself. When my mother and father got married in the early 1960s, they lived on a factory worker's wage, one wage. They mm-hmm. rented a tenement, a flat where I was born. We moved into a county council house, which they rented and then bought. And out of that, they bought their final home. And they were able to do that by the time they were younger than me.
Yeah.
And
yep,
that is a system that worked.
Yes.
And what we need to do is to look at the fact that we have made a system that doesn't work. It is broken from the bottom up, and it needs to be reinvented from the bottom up. And saying that somehow the solution is providers like landlords, as if they were providing sandwiches or cars. Yes. This is, as Jessica quite rightly said, this is a human right. And if people were starving, we would say we are denying people their rights. Well, we're denying people their right to have a safe home. And by the way, the United Nations back in the 60s said that housing was a human right. And almost every country that signed up to that declaration has failed to provide that human right because they subsequently signed up to neoliberal economics that said let the market provide.
Yep.
Okay, will you stay there? 51551, just a short break to take.
Talk to Joe on 1850 715 815. Talk to Joe on 1850 715 815.
And text 51551. I'm going to bring Aisling in and Kilkenny in a moment. But Paula, just before the break there, you were saying that, you know, this needs to stop and we need to go back to the system that you grew up in. How would it work? I mean, what is the solution here, do you think, to this problem? And we're hearing now from a completely different cohort of society. We're hearing from middle-aged, middle-class people that are affected by this and people that are single as well. If you add all the three together, it seems like a perfect storm in terms of not being able to find somewhere to live.
Well, I think that I would just make an observation on the media, if you don't mind, Damien, your profession.
Go ahead.
This cohort has been here all along.
Yeah.
You've just discovered it today.
Yeah.
And that is...
thanks to Jessica making the call. As she said, too many people are afraid to admit or afraid to put their head above the parapet or feel that their dignity would be in question if they were to go public. So it's thanks to Jessica making this call.
And that's the reason why I rang. I rang specifically to endorse Jessica because she is so brave, because mostly in relation to tricky issues like this, people stay silent. And until we break our silence, we will not know how many we are. And it isn't just true of housing. There are many, many issues mm-hmm. upon which we have to break our silence. As to the question of the solution, here's my response to that, Damien. I don't think that there's a simple answer. I think that the system is so broken. Like many broken systems, what we need to do is to stop trying to solve in a piecemeal way. The only way you will ever get to address whole systems like housing is with whole system solutions. And that means convening conversations, not meetings, not conferences, but processes, long scale processes that bring together all the parts of the system, all the people who have a role in making the problem, and therefore have a role in providing a solution and moving towards a different state. And the difficulty that we have is that we tend not to see whole system problems. What we do is we sort of see problematic people or actors, banks or county councils or landlords. All of these people are now trapped inside a system that's broken. Nobody can fix it on their own. And politicians can't fix it on their own either. They're not that intelligent. None of us is that smart. None of us is that. No, don't laugh. I don't mean it like that. I'm talking about systems intelligence.
In general,
I'm talking
yeah.
about. I'm bringing a living systems perspective to this. I'm saying that once you have a whole system problem, you need whole system solutions.
Absolutely.
And the only way that you can address them is by bringing the whole system together. And I'm speaking now professionally, so I know what I'm talking about.
Mm-hmm.
You have to actually convene whole systems around whole system problems. And there are multitudes of them. We hear them on the news every day, and none of them will ever be addressed piecemeal. And housing is just one of them, but the primary one. And we are entitled as citizens of this state to have a home. And that someone like Jessica, and myself, by the way, can reach middle age without actually ever being able to call our own door is a disgrace. We have nothing to be ashamed of. Shame on the people who keep this broken system on the road. We need a movement.
Yes,
and we will not get a movement until we break our silence. And when we break our silence, we will discover how many we are.
Hmm. Okay, it's strong points made there.
Yeah,
can I bring
Aisling
in? Aisling, good afternoon to you. You've been waiting there. Go ahead. Your situation.
Hi, all. Yeah, thanks for having me. I suppose I was listening to the conversation, and it's something that's been circulating in our household for a long time. Myself and my partner, we've been living, in rented accommodation. He's been living 21 years in rented accommodation, and I've been living probably 13 years now at this stage. And we've been living out of home since we were 16 and 17. So, and that was just due to family circumstances that, we could no longer live there. We had to be out, we had to be working, we had to be young professionals and make our way in the world, But it's mad, like, listening to all the, obviously we would be in the same bracket as a lot of 30-year-olds that are currently in many different positions. So our position is that, we're two young professionals, we have two young kids, our family homes are, we can't move home. In order to save for a mortgage, we can't live in a caravan because we have two little kids to look after. And we're basically stuck in this constant loop of money comes in, money goes out, money comes in, money goes out. And you can't save for a mortgage. It's nigh on impossible.
So you're renting in Kilkenny?
Renting in Kilkenny, and I commute to Dublin every day for work. Now, that was pre-pandemic. Obviously, since the pandemic, I've been working from home. Which has been a blessing, but also because of the commute, it was a 2.5-hour commute from Kilkenny to Dublin and back again.
Yeah. And during the pandemic, the fact that you were working from home, did that make it easier maybe to start saving for a deposit for a mortgage? Is that your dream? Is that your aim? Is that your ambition, you and your partner, to own your own home by the time you're 40?
Oh, absolutely. And even 40 seems impossible, it doesn't even seem like, we keep saying, 2 to 3 years, and it just keeps getting put off. But during the pandemic, yes, we have saved money, certainly myself anyway, from the commute.
Yeah.
And we have been able to put away things slowly, but obviously just due to circumstances as well, my dad had recently had a stroke, and he lives in Thailand. And again, I know that another lady was talking there about not being able to get over to see their family in America. The same thing happened to us. We couldn't get to Thailand to go and see dad, and basically, we had to send him money to make sure that he was okay. So the savings are kind of gone again, So and that's another thing that people in other countries have been affected by COVID. They haven't been able to pick up their jobs, or they've lost their jobs, and then they're relying on us, the people that are still in Ireland that are earning a good wage, and send them money. So you're no matter what we do at the moment in our lives, again, money just keeps going out because there's always someone else that needs it more than us. But then we're just stuck here, and we're probably going to be renting for the next 10 years because of that.
Mm. I just wonder, Jessica, if you were able to prove that over a period of 10, 20 years that you've never missed a payment on rent,
yeah.
Does that not count for anything when you go into the bank?
It counts for nothing,
no.
Damien. Nothing. Zero. I can prove it.
Yeah.
I'm an exemplary tenant. I've paid rent religiously, and I have the references to prove it. It doesn't matter. None of it matters.
And would you have an idea now how much you've spent in rent in
your life? Oh, easily enough to buy a house. I'd say 140, easily over 300,000.
Like there should be some sort of a system in place that would take that into account in terms of...
You'd think. I mean, in some countries they do. I mean, a lot of countries they take that into account when they're giving mortgages. I mean, the thing is...
Well, can I ask you, Jessica, like, it's not as if you're out of work. It's not as if you're, you know, single parent, you know, struggling maybe to raise a family or anything like that. How much comfortably can you afford a month in rent? Like, what would you be willing to pay now? What, if you can give me a ballpark figure, if I'm not being too personal about it?
To give a sense to
people out there of what's happening, how much can you afford to pay in rent?
Well, I can afford, if I were paying without any housing assistance or anything like that, I could probably manage about 700 a month.
Right.
That would be a rent that I could manage. Because, I mean, I am a freelance actor. I worry. I do get a good bit of work, but there are times when I'm not working. But I always have enough work. I always have enough to pay my rent.
Okay.
Always. And so, I could, if I were to do it without help, and I would prefer to do it without, I don't want supplements, although I have to rely on them from time to time, 700, I'd say, would be the amount. That would be a reasonable amount for me for a one-bedroom,
okay,
not some little... You know, whole of a room, an actual place to live.
A one-bedroom apartment in the city. Okay,
yeah.
So what we have now is a situation where a woman in her 50s that's never missed a rent, a monthly rental payment over 30 or 40 years. 30, okay, I'm aging you here. And willing to pay 700 euros, has a relatively steady income, is now completely not in a position to find somewhere to actually live.
A one-bedroom place would be twice that almost nowadays. That's how the rents have gone.
Okay, I want to bring PJ, first male voice, in on this. PJ, good afternoon to you.
Yeah, good afternoon, Damien.
You're listening to our discussion on being able to afford to even rent a place, let alone buy somewhere.
Exactly, and I just wanted to thank the two girls because, just like they were saying, I just recently turned 50, and for people like me, we've kind of become forgotten. And I was telling you, research, I was renting up to about 6-7 years ago. And like that previous girl, I was able to afford maybe 700 or 800 euros a month. I have a public sector job. I suppose my close friends would not be surprised at what I'm saying, but I guess a lot of my acquaintances probably would be shocked. They'd look at me and they'd say, sir, he couldn't be in such a situation. And only for my mother, who's now 70, and her goodwill, I would actually be homeless. Mm-hmm. And I'm 30 years working the same job, 50 years of age, earning about 40 to 45,000 a year. But because of the price of rent, I've three daughters now who are almost grown up, and I've really had, I suppose, despite what people have said, nothing but shame has kind of followed me around. Because I see my daughters who were, I'm so proud of, but when you haven't got your own door to shut, when everybody leaves in the evening time, it's a very, very lonely place. And it's just something the girls have highlighted, that is, it's so common. When I start talking to other people, their eyes light up and they kind of go, I'm in the same situation.
Mm-hmm.
And they've struggled so hard to get to even where they are. I could be lucky, Damien, in the next couple of months. I may get planning permission to build a house, but I'd probably be only able to borrow approximately 130,000 euros. If I go to a builder with that, he's probably going to shrug his shoulders and tell me, well, I can only go as far as there. But I'm willing to go as far as there to get my own place at 50 years of age.
And you're working 30 years?
I'm 30 years in the same job, public sector job, a very good job, and I'm sure people that may recognise my voice probably are turned already up at this stage going, how could he be there? But I am here just like those girls and loads of other people my age group. We're kind of forgotten about. Even one of the girls was mentioning sharing. If you turn up at a door sharing, you do get the look straight away. You know, I'm going to talk for 10 minutes. They're going to take on my details, but they don't want you. I don't drink, and people are. If you're sharing with people who are even having a bit of crack and a bit of fun or having a good night out, that's all difficult stuff you could do. But they won't take you on.
So,
you
know? I mean, it's something in your 20s or as students, you know, sharing a house.
Yeah, when you're young, sure.
It's grand. But not you want your own privacy, is what you're saying, PJ, at 50. And, like, what does it do for... it's a question I put to Jessica earlier. What about your own self-confidence? Do you get down by it? Do you feel...
I'd be pretty confident and well able to speak and have a good job and all of that. But... only last year, something I probably would have rolled my eyes at, I got a panic attack. And it was from the constant chipping away at, I'm probably going to get something. Yeah, I'm probably going to get somewhere. And, you know, as I said, I had three daughters. I have to have somewhere maybe just to bring them even for a Sunday lunch and that we can have a bit of a chat. But when you're, if you had to share or even with your mother, it's difficult to do that. But like I said to you, I got a panic attack. I probably poured my heart out a bit too much.
No, you're
something
right.
I thought I was dying with a heart attack or something. And it so that's what had, that's what has done to me. Right, I've gone out through it and I've rolled up my sleeves. But I'm still fighting that battle. I'm even fighting possibly with the council now. Why do I need to build where I'm going to build? And I work 2 miles away from where I'm living and I'm living there all my life. You know, so, but hopefully I get over that, Jamie. But I really want to emphasise this. Even take me out of the equation. The amount of people that are in the situation is unreal, and people are trying to connect and marry the mental health. If you haven't got your own key to shut or to your front door, I think the girls will agree with me there.
And PJ,
and this one to
go on, Jessica.
I just want to pipe in. Sorry,
or Aisling.
Well, it's such a multifaceted conversation because you know, obviously there's all different age groups on in the conversation at the moment, and it's just going back to let's say what he's mentioning about having panic attacks, and you know, there's such pressure as well on us young people as well to keep up with the Joneses, you know, that you have to have the certain type of runners, you have to have the certain type of phone, you know, and then you see all these young professionals getting their houses and you have to then up your game and you nearly think, well, am I going to be able to afford a house like that? Am I going to be able to afford to put in all these bits and pieces into our houses to make us relevant? And, you know, it's a lot of pressure on us. And I was saying there before from the commute as well, like, I was out last year and I took a year off work. I was on sick leave because I was burnt out going up and down to Dublin. And again, you know, thinking of the pressures of, well, where are we going to be in the next 2 years? Where are we going to be in 4 years? Mm-hmm. And again, you know, we have two young kids, like, and they're the ones that count, and they're the ones that we're trying to make sure that they have a stable home.
God knows what the situation will be like when they're your age. It's frightful to actually think about it. Will we be still talking about this? Aisling, I'm going to let you go. Thanks a million. I need to go to a break. Jessica, if you can stay with me, you're very good for giving us your time.
No problem. You've
certainly opened up a major discussion here, because they're getting lots of texts, lots of calls, lots of emails from people in a similar position to yourself. PJ, if you can stay there as well, back after this.
Talk to Joe on 1850 715 815. Talk to Joe on 1850 715 815.
Yeah, it's Damien here for Joe today. And Jessica Freed called us to tell us of her situation where she finds herself middle-aged, middle-income, single, and with nowhere she can call home and no prospect of it. And it's kind of unearthed a big problem where... finding here with all of our callers that have contacted us, people in the similar situation, middle-aged, middle-income, single, sometimes all a combination of all three, and facing the prospect of maybe not being able to even afford somewhere to actually rent. PJ, can I just come back to you before you were chatting to us there before the break? Like, simple things, like a relationship. You know, wanting to have a relationship when you're living at home or not sure of where you're going to actually, you know, buy a house or being able to rent a house into the future. Are there things like that, the luxuries of life that other people can enjoy, are they problems then? Does that have that knock-on effect?
Absolutely. I've been single a few years now, and definitely it plays a part in it because, as you say, other people that maybe have relationships, it's not something you think about. You know, you have your own home and you can do your own thing and simple as that. But when you haven't got, like, my first priority was my three children, and we're almost there with them, right? But it puts so many blocks for everyday life. You know, even a little bit of socialising. As I said, I don't have a drink, but if I wanted to have a friend around, call for a cup of tea. And God love, my mother is brilliant. I should just mind people calling around. I know COVID was a big problem, but even getting someone to call around to your house, you know, your mother's house, you know, and you're imposing on her privacy. And people probably feel, I know, I won't call around, you call to me. So yes, relationships, everything is a problem. But mm-hmm. to me, I think most people, and it's setting the bar very low. I think a lot of people can probably put up with that, which is probably a sad way to think about it. But if you could just get your own house, you know, I think there's a scheme in Europe where you pay a maximum of 1/3 of your wages on rent. I would love to be able to pay rent for 20 years and say, well, it's my place, I can't be put out. You know, I could go renting down the west, you know, 3 hours away from where I work, and in a year's time I would be told to get out of it. So you have nothing to hang on to. Like 1 year, moving furniture, getting your kids' hopes built up, maybe a relationship built up, and then you're shifted on again, you know.
Yeah, because it you know, might make life a little bit easier if you did meet somebody and in a similar situation where at least then together you could maybe afford to rent somewhere. Do you know what I mean? I mean, is that something, Jessica? I don't want to be getting too personal about it.
Are you talking about meeting somebody romantically that you can
well,
live in?
Yes, exactly.
I'm sorry for laughing, but I mean, as PJ said, I mean, it totally plays into the ability to do that. The idea that you would go looking for someone to hook up with, they'd give you a roof over your head,
but romantically, I mean, the fact that you're couch surfing would have an impact.
You can't have relationships; are almost impossible. You don't even have the energy for it. It's like it's outside. You're thinking, exactly. Do you know what? I really should get out there. I really should be. You think you're just trying to survive, you know? Yeah. And I mean, it was difficult. Well, difficult enough for me. 10 years as a carer. So that's a whole other issue for another day. But who are people who are trapped looking after people, and relationships are difficult, not impossible, but they're difficult even in that context. But without a home, without a place that you could, where you could go out, you could meet somebody, you could, you know, you could think, oh, because you know, this relationship could go somewhere. Can't.
Yeah, because I'm getting back to the initial point that you were making. You focused in a little bit on the single issue. At least if you were romantically involved with somebody else and they could come up with 700 or 800 and you come up with 700 or 800, it would make life so much easier to be able
to... Obviously, but this is the thing, and this is where people veer off as well. Because everybody just thinks of people in couples. Yes, of course. Everything is rent. Everything is priced as if you're a couple. Even one-bedroom places are priced as if there are two people paying 600 or 700 euro, and not. I mean, which is ridiculous. A one-bedroom place is really for one person. If two people move into it, grand. But priced as if everybody comes in a pair, like Noah's Ark. Well, they don't, you know. You don't have the, you know, unless you come. I mean, of course, we've all had. I've had a series of relationships, but it doesn't. You don't think in those terms. You shouldn't be hooking up with somebody or thinking, God, now if I just had somebody, now we could move in together and then it'd be fine. That's not a relationship. Two things are totally separate.
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
I want a room. I want a roof over my head. I want a home. I want to live in peace.
But to be able to go and get romantically involved with somebody, is obviously made that more a little bit more difficult for obvious reasons.
Of course it's made more difficult.
Exactly.
Yes, all I can think about is where am I going to go in February? I don't have the energy to go out looking for a relationship at this point. You know what I mean? Everything, it takes all your energy, and PJ said about having panic attacks that they never had before. I totally relate to that. I'm not an anxious person. I'm good. I've always been very good at coping. I've always, you know, I can kind of keep it together. But I mean, I have, since this has happened, and even though I can rationalize it and I have good support system with friends and stuff, I have leaping anxiety that I never had before, you know? And this is what happens to you. It doesn't matter how mentally strong you are. It plays havoc, as Nuala said, it plays havoc with your mental health.
51551 is our text. Maria, in your 40s, single and renting forever.
Hi, how you doing?
Good. Go ahead, Maria.
Yeah, Thank you. No, I'm delighted that these ladies came on today to have this conversation and raise a lot more of awareness. I think there's a bit of a caveat here that's been positioned in society around, you know, first-time buyers and the age bracket that they're in. They've, I suppose, had the benefit of living at home, majority of them, and being able to save. But when you're renting, you cannot save as mm-hmm. you're in an accelerated, I suppose, situation, and affordability isn't there. You just don't have the funds. My biggest worry, and it's interesting to hear ladies who are just a little bit older than me talk about this. My biggest worry is being a senior person in this country and coming up to retirement if I cannot afford to buy my own home and renting at that time. I won't have the affordability if rent increases keep going the way they're going. And it does concern me, and I don't hear any solutions being talked about in government or in society at all. Like, it's just a very, very worrying thing. And what's gas as well is that this this rent max, this percentage that was at 4% annually is now gone up to 8%. I don't understand the logic of increasing that and putting more pressure on the individuals renting. Like, my previous track record, never missed one rental payment to a landlord, never in any situation like that. But they have used their discretion to add that uplift to 4% every single opportunity that they have.
I think the government, is there some talk, did I hear Micheál Martin in the US talk about that it's a good idea, some plan now to link rent increases to inflation that would mean that those increases are not as big? I don't know whether that's...
It should be. It should be. And also, like, if you think about the I'm sorry, I know you're trying to come in.
Sorry to interrupt you.
No, it's okay. I think that's a really good point that you made, right, around the rate of inflation. Like, it's not in line either with wage salaries increasing. It's not relative to what to everything else that's going on from an affordability perspective.
Okay, 51551, the text. Lisa is in Kildare. Stay with me there, Maria. Go ahead, Lisa.
Hi, I just wanted to say I'm actually in a very lucky position. I have a mortgage, which doesn't sound like it every month, but and I'm just listening to it, and I can't believe that this is still going on. I was originally from Dunleary, and when we were buying our home, there's no way you could buy in Dunleary unless you had won the lotto. But just when I look at, for instance, Dunleary County Council and the big library that they built a couple of years ago, I mean, it's unbelievable, I think, the amount of money that the county councils can spend when obviously housing is not their priority. And I don't believe they should be allowed to spend that amount of money on other projects when they aren't housing the people on their housing list. It is an emergency and they don't seem to be taking it lightly.
Well, Dara O'Brien, you know, the minister, he's the latest in a whole series of ministers that says he has a plan, and they're going to build more and more affordable houses over the next few years. Now, you do see an awful lot of building going on, particularly around Dublin. I don't know whether it's near enough or not. But Jessica, do you see, you know, the housing for all or whatever they call it, actually having an impact within the next 5-10 years to the point that you will be able to afford your own home?
No, I don't. And for the simple reason is, Damien, they're tinkering around the edges with this. They're trying to find solutions without tackling the crux of the problem, which is hoarding. Treating property like a commodity, hoarding, flipping, and all that. You could build 50,000 houses a year. You could build 100,000 houses a year. But unless you stop people buying them up and hoarding them, mm-hmm. it's not going to make any difference. They will not challenge that core group of people that they rely on for votes. They're spending €1 billion a year in HAP and rent supplements, which is really the housing equivalent of a soup kitchen. It's keeping people, it's going into private landlords' pockets. I don't blame landlords for taking it. I don't blame tenants for going for it. I wouldn't be able to afford a place without it. But I resent having to take it. It doesn't solve the problem. It is just going in. It's keeping the prices up. Yeah. Its prices are unaffordable. And instead of letting the market, their famous free market, instead of letting it find its level, they are artificially keeping it up by paying out taxpayers' money to private landlords.
All right. Look, there are loads of calls coming in on this. I think Paula actually said earlier on, she was making the point that we need a bit of joined-up thinking. There's
absolutely
a systems failure.
Absolutely joined-up thinking,
And there's no joined-up thinking from beginning to end, which involves all the actors and all the stakeholders involved in building houses, in financing houses, in buying houses, and legislating for everything else that goes into building houses and schools and all of that sort of thing. Okay, 51551, joe@rte.ie. Stay with us.
Talk to Joe on 1850 715 815. Talk to Joe on 1850 715 815.
And Maggie is in Cork. Maggie, thanks for holding on there. Good afternoon to you. Your situation.
Oh, hi, Damien. Well, first of all, I know everyone is saying it. Thank you so much to Jessica for bringing this up. I was listening to him when I was picking my son up from school, and I just felt I really had to ring. I've never rung any of these shows before. Also, I'm not very eloquent, but I'll give it to you in my best words.
You're great, and thanks for making the call.
Oh, thank you so much for having me on. So I'm a 43-year-old single mom, and due to an illness in my sort of my 20s, a mental health illness in my 20s, up to the end, I wasn't diagnosed until I was in my late 20s. Basically, I had all those years where I wasn't, you know, building or sorry, saving for a house or thinking about a house. So I suppose from my 30s onwards, I was sort of just backpedaling all the time. So I'm now, obviously, I'm a single mom, and I just feel so shamed all the time. I feel that I'm being looked down on when I've worked. I've never worked apart from a couple of weeks where I've been ill, and I've contributed to society and paid my taxes, and I've never, ever, ever missed a month's rent. And I just feel I'm here in this position with rents going up the whole time. And like this other lady said, I'm thinking about my future. It's only recently that I've been paying into a pension. And so realistically, that's not going to be much when I get to retirement age. And I worry about my child, that I'm going to have to be looked after by him. And it's just all very stressful. And I guess I just really hope that when this conversation is, you know, finished on the radio, show, that something can be like all of us can connect or something can be done.
That would be wonderful.
Yeah, I just feel it's just, you know, it's something that's never spoken about. And I just, it's such a worry. And like, as Jessica said, Jessica, it's a right, a human right to have a home and feel secure. And I don't. And I just don't know where to go or what to do. So, yeah, I'm just so grateful to be able to speak.
And Maggie, have you a plan, or can you plan? Are you like so many of our other callers here today, you're earning a good enough wage, but money's getting in one hand and out the other?
Yeah. No, I haven't. Now, I'm on a housing list, but I'm working part-time, and I'm working like as many hours as I can and earning, you know, a decent enough wage. But like, there is no way. I'm still struggling to make ends meet all the time. I can't save a penny. So I have no plan. I have no idea when I might get a house. I only have one child, and the accommodation I have now is 2 bedrooms, so I'm not, you know, wouldn't be seen as in dire need. But it's just the fact, and I'm happy where I am, but it's the fact that the landlord obviously is in charge, and I don't know from one minute to the next what's going to happen.
And just listening to you there a little bit earlier, is it a fair question to say, do you feel that there's a stigma attached to be renting in your 40s? Did I pick that up wrong?
Huge. Oh, huge. And I'll tell you why. I feel it the most since my child started school. And we would be from, you know, a rural enough location where it would be the norm to have, you know, he's in a country school, the big house, the big massive house, and they're all rattling around in it. And even for, you know, parties and going places, I can't bring children really back. There's no garden, we have a balcony. And like, you know, you hear about people in Europe and, you know, that's all quite normal. But I just feel so ashamed. I should be happy that I've been very resilient, and I've gotten, you know, it's bipolar disorder I have. I'm on medications, and I'm an incredibly resilient person.
Yeah, you sound
and
it.
I've held it together through all of this. And I just feel that with all of the rent I've paid through the years, without one missed payment, that it means nothing, and I'll never have a chance of a home because I can't save.
Can I say something, Damien?
Yes, go ahead, Jessica.
Maggie, I really want to say that I'm glad you rang. I think you probably know this yourself. You have, like Paula said, you have nothing to be ashamed of. There's no shame. You are resilient. This is not your problem and it is not your fault. Never, ever, ever feel ashamed. Be anything but proud of yourself for
Thank
where you.
You
are at the moment.
Thank you so much. I appreciate that. Thank you.
Yeah. What about family, Maggie? Do you know people might say, well, have you, you know, have your family to call it? That's not always the case for a lot of people. It's not easy for people.
It's not, and I'll tell you why. It's because I guess I've come from a family that would be quite affluent, but I was the black sheep of the family. And going back, it was because of my bipolar and wasn't managed. And I did go to the UK because I felt I had to escape, you know, from the stigma. But I came home and had my child, and that's still there, you know. And so my family, like maybe a lot of it is my paranoia or whatever, but I would never, even my pride wouldn't let me anyway. I feel I need to look after myself. It's very important for mental health that I look after myself and my child. So, you know, it's not something I'd even think about, nor I'm not sure if I would get the help anyway. So,
and what are you going without now, if you know what I mean?
Well, I suppose I'm very lucky in the fact that my child's father, we get on very well and he does help me out. But it's just, I guess it's in terms of just month to month, you're constantly just trying to juggle what's most important. And things like the winter now is going to be very tough. And I heard on the radio yesterday about the, you know, the energy increase, prices and increasing in that. And I'm stressing about that because I don't know how that's going to work. And so, I mean, day to day, it's just, I mean, I'm managing, I'm getting food on the table, but I'm not going to be going getting takeaways or, and I actually don't miss any of those things. And I'm happy, I'm very grateful for how we're able to survive. But like, it's just every month, like I have a credit card which is maxed, and I've just for times where I have to go to the dentist or the tire blows or, you know, I've no nest egg. And I'm paying, like the rent is just so horrendous. And in fact, it's just going up and up. There's no cap to it. I don't understand why there's no talk. And I know landlords are there and it's a business and, you know, it's how they make their money. But like, it's scandalous. Like, to think these apartments are being rented for 1500 a month and they're two beds, there's no garden, and we're not in the city. It just beggars belief, in my opinion.
Well, Maggie, listen, thank you for your eloquent call to us today for contributing to this conversation. And mind yourself, and thanks very much for ringing us.
Thanks to Jessica and that other lady as well. I didn't catch her name, but honestly, I'm so grateful.
All right, you know you're not alone. All right, bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
Talk to Joe on 1850 715 815. Talk to Joe on 1850 715 815.
I have a feeling we'll be coming back to this story tomorrow again because we're just getting so many calls. I'll try to get to as many of them as I can. Sandra, go ahead.
Hi there, Damien. I just wanted to contribute because I understand Jessica's situation. I'm living in a shed with electricity but no running water.
A shed?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Because I can't afford rent. So,
Whose shed are you living in? Or where?
I'm not going to say.
No, don't say. But are you living like in someone's garden?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So, you know, it's a very difficult situation. And this country does not take into account people who are single. It's just crazy. It's a bad situation. And it needs to be addressed. So I'm not going to go into any more detail because I don't want to get anyone in trouble. But this country is not fulfilling its care of duty for people. No. It's not good.
Yeah, I think that says it all, really, to be honest.
And Sandra, you say here in your call, you're again, I can say it because you told us you're in your early 50s. So you're an example of so many people that are calling us today that we probably never really heard from before on this.
Yeah, and it's very hard to talk about because there's so much shame involved in it, and you feel so dispossessed. And there's no hope. There's no hope anymore.
But you got to...
In this country.
I know, Sandra. And have you friends and support, Sandra?
I have some friends, yes.
that you can confide in? Because you sound very upset there, and I don't, you know.
Yeah, because, you know, this doesn't get talked about. So you just soldier on.
Yeah. That's the thing about, if I can say, Damien, you see, the word shame is really resonating with me. We love shame in this country. Shame has been responsible for so much toxic poison in society. And we know with all the scandals, and it is down to shame, and it, and people feel that they are dispossessed is a good word as well. That's exactly how I wouldn't have thought of that, but you know, you're right. You do feel dispossessed.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and trying to always put on the brave face. That's the way we've always been, and as you said, mm-hmm. in many different ways of life and walks of life in Ireland, going way back, as you said, that word shame and what the neighbours would think and all of that has blighted us.
And it keeps people quiet. It just keeps yeah. it keeps. I mean, people have to break that. As Paula said, just break it.
Do you know what, Jessica? I mean, Sandra, I'm really sorry to hear how upset you were. I don't know whether, Jessica, you'd like to talk to Sandra off air or whatever, just to kind of, because I don't want to leave you like this, Sandra.
I don't want to leave her like that either.
Is that okay, Sandra?
Of course it is. Oh, is it okay with you, Sandra? Of course I will.
Because you might be able to help each other anyway, and I'm really sorry to hear that, but you've nothing to be ashamed of, Sandra, and you have a lot of support here, I can tell you, from listeners. And look, I think this is something we're going to come back to tomorrow, because there are so many other people who want to get into this. Jessica Fried, thank you so much for making that call to Liveline today.
Thanks, Damien. And
we'll keep in touch with you. And maybe, as you said, and Paula said, something can be done in terms of a movement, or you can try and maybe work together. But we'll put you in touch with Sandra there, because I think maybe, you know, you might be able to, as they say, a problem shared is a problem halved. And Sandra, thanks for making the call. Jessica, thanks to all our callers today. The BCO was Daniel Keating, Liam Mullum was on sound, research by Richie Byrne, Angus McAnally produced, and Ray Darcy is up next. Good afternoon.
Liveline on RTE Radio 1 with Kia. Going electric? Plug into the Kia e-range of EVs and PHEVs.
Kia. Movement that inspires.
1850 715 815 stays open until 3:15 p.m. or email joe@rte.ie.